Why, hello there, and welcome.
You're listening to the Creepy Crap Podcast. It's quick, simple, and Australian. Now, if you want to follow along on the socials, you can get the show on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, and Discord, all at one word at the Creepy Crap Podcast. Or we could share film histories on Letterboxd at the Creepy Crap Pod. And if you enjoy the podcast today, why not show some love with a 5-star review on whatever app you listen to this with? Alright, now let's start one of Australia's favourite horror podcasts, the Creepy Crap Podcast. And be warned that this episode will most likely contain swearing, spoilers, and adult themes. Welcome, Creepy Crapsters, to another episode of the Creepy Crap Podcast. My name's Danny Boy, and this is episode 5. This is our first book-related episode. This is crazy, man. You're like, what? That's off-brand, bro. I'm like, yeah, I know. I'm mixing it up, you know. It's a new year, new me, and all that stuff. So let's get stuck into episode 5. And just before we get into the episode, I've got another promo clip for this week, and it is from the boys at the VHS Abyss. You want to know all about them? Well, have a listen to this, and then we'll start the guest chat.
What's up, VHS heads? I'm Matt. Join me and my two broskies, Chris and Dave, on our movie comparison podcast, The VHS Abyss, putting two movies from the golden age of cinema against each other. Whether it's a teenage soldier head-to-head, like Red Dawn versus Toy Soldiers, or simply picking two from a back catalogue of icons of the VHS era, like Roddy Piper or Jamie Lee Curtis. Whatever link we can find between two films, we've got you covered. With facts, gaffes, and plenty of laughs along the way, join us on all podcast platforms to discover who will be crowned champion of the episode. We are the VHS Abyss. Whether it's a hit or a miss, we love to reminisce.
I've got a special guest with me this week. It's the first author to the show. I've got Alan Shivers. Amazing name, by the way. And thank you and welcome to the show.
Thanks. Thank you very much. I really appreciate you having me on as a first author. I feel privileged. Thank you.
You are on here because you are an author and you've made a trilogy, the European Halls trilogy. It's a slasher. Tell me all about the book.
Yeah. So the pen name's Alan Shivers. I'm from Belgium and I've just finished up the trilogy. So it's called European Halls. There's three of them. Obviously, it's a trilogy. And the first one is set in Belgium in like a prestigious boarding school. And there's girls from all over Europe that go to that school. It has a bit of a urban legend, Scream, I Know I Did Last Summer, kind of 90s vibe, but very much set in modern times at the same time too. And there's obviously a serial killer on the loose. There's certain patterns that the girls have to find out and understand. They're very much aware of the slasher rules. It's a bit meta in that kind of Scream sense. It doesn't take itself too seriously. It's fun. It's scary, but it's fun at the same time. It's very fast paced and lots of twists and turns. Yeah. And the second one's out today. It's European Halls 2, Summer in Budapest. And that one is set in Budapest. It's more of a summer slasher, that one. Again, very international casts. The idea is really to bring in different European cultures in there, in the mix, to kind of stray away from, as much as I love it, the typical summer camp American Midwestern setting that a lot of slashers go for. So I thought it would be cool to bring like a European perspective and have a setting as well on like queer representation and mental health awareness is in there as well.
Yeah, nice one. You put your own little spin on it. What was your inspiration? How did you come up with the story and decide to make it like an epic 3-book saga?
I think it was a selfish thing in the beginning. I was kind of missing 90s chase scenes, if that makes sense. I really loved like in I Know What You Did Last Summer, Urban Legend, or even in the 80s with Prom Nights. There was something about modern slashes that, as much as I still love them, I was really missing epic long chase scenes. And I was like, well, fuck it. If they don't make them they do make them, but not as frequently, I'll just write it myself. So it was just like a personal project at first. Then came a breakup. Then came the pandemic. So I had a lot of time on my hands, basically. And I just wrote it for myself first, but then I started sending it to some friends and family, and they were all very positive. It ended up being published, and it did really well, the first one, which I didn't expect, obviously, because I'm new at this. But yeah, and the idea was kind of something over the years. I kept thinking in certain settings, you know, when you walk around the city or when you're home, you think, ooh, this would be a really nice setting for a slasher, or this would be a really cool kill scene.
I'd love to see someone die.
So it's kind of, exactly, just like a normal human being, you know. So it kind of all came together with that first story. It was kind of a big love letter, I would say, to slashers. is like my personal homage in a way.
Yeah, I really like that idea. I don't have enough of this. I'm going to add it. I'll make my own thing then. That's heaps good.
Basically. And yeah. Just manifesting that some screenplay, you know, Kevin Williamson, if you're out there, love you, ever picks it up. And it'll be a good Netflix trilogy, I think.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that. If you did get made into a movie, do you have any ideas of who you'd like to be cast into the leads? Because it's six girls. Is that right? They're the main ones?
In the first one, yeah. So it's six potential girls. Honestly, I would love it if they were very famous European actresses, because they're all from different countries within Europe. And again, it would kind of stray away from the going for the main girls in Hollywood. And I think it could be a cool idea if different countries have like very famous people coming in for the film and then really representing their own culture, their own language, their own accents. Because as you can hear, I have an accent too. I'm Belgian and I'm not a native speaker. I think I would prefer local European actresses over big names, just because it would feel more authentic.
Pretty good. Yeah, I was curious. I guess I probably won't know the actresses, you might be thinking then.
If anything, if there would be like a big name, I would say bring in Jenna Ortega, because she's pretty much a scream queen by now. How do you pronounce it? Yeah, Maya Goth, or how do you pronounce her name? Mia Goth?
I say Mia, I think, yeah. I haven't really actually heard it out loud. I have no idea.
There we go. Some research is happening after this.
So. Put me on the spot there. I have no idea.
Sorry. No, yeah, Miss Pearl, I'll put it that way.
Yeah, you said you're from Belgium. Like, I mean, I'll go back to the book after this. What is in Belgium? I just don't know about it. What is Belgium known for? It's not just chocolate. Is that a stereotype? Belgium,
it's not a stereotype. It is very much known for chocolate, and there's chocolate factories everywhere. I even grew up just right next to a chocolate factory. My dad used to work for one. So I grew up like rating different types of chocolates. So that's when tourists come over to Belgium, that's obviously what they go for the chocolates. I think food in general is very well known, because waffles are obviously Belgian.
Oh, right.
The fries are from Belgium too. Even though they're called French fries, it comes from cutting things in a French way, meaning diagonally. So it's actually Belgian French fries. Yeah, the French cuts, and then like Brussels sprouts. But other than that, what is known here, architecture. We're really big on Art Nouveau was born in Belgium, for example. Architectural style.
I'm nodding as if I know who that is. I'm just like, yeah.
Sure.
My top five architects.
The underdog of one of the European countries, but I personally like it because we're right next to Amsterdam, Paris, and London. We're in between those three, and they're all just 2 hours away.
Yeah, wow.
So a lot of people kind of fly into Belgium first, but then they would go to Amsterdam. But I live in the capital, so Brussels. It's also the European Union capital, so the EU capital. And the nice thing is it's the most international city in Europe. So there's like 183 nationalities here. So you literally hear all possible languages you can imagine on the street. And I really love that because you can learn all the time. You bump into people and you go, oh, what's that? That's Macedonian, or there's English, there's French. It's mostly French speaking, but it's a mix of everything. So
how many languages can you speak?
Seven in total. Not all at the same level. I would say four of them hopefully really well, and then other ones I have good notions of because I've lived in other countries in the past too.
Yeah, wow, that's amazing. Yeah, I see some of your posts and I have no idea what you're saying. I'm just like, oh yeah, that's good. That's interesting.
Yeah, Dutch is my mother tongue. That's the first one, and then of course French. You speak on a daily basis living in Brussels.
Oh, okay.
And English for work. So, and I write in English.
Oh, very interesting. And talking about writing, when did you start? When did you get an interest for writing, and when did it become something where you're like, I think there's something to this?
I think I've always written things. Even I remember as a kid, I was always writing these little comic books with girls in skimpy dresses being killed. So I don't know if I've always been a bit of a weird one, but I suppose so. I remember
Sounds
my
like
parents
you have.
Going, yeah, I'll own it. I remember my parents going, this is creative, but... And then I studied literature. I studied English, Spanish literature at university in Belgium, and I moved to the UK in Manchester to study there as well. So I've always done poetry and essay writing and review writing. But it was only like a year and a half ago, like I said, with the pandemic and everything, that I was like, okay, I'm going to give this a proper go. And it felt really nice to create your own world and this is, you know, have this escapism that you can lose yourself in these characters and actually get really emotional when you have to off some of them, because it's a trilogy, so some of them do make it, some of them don't. And I remember one of my favorite ones, I really had to kill that person off because it mattered to the story, and I was like, okay, I need a moment, so I just had a cigarette, a coffee, and I needed like a day of not continuing to
say goodbye.
Basically. Yeah.
With the characters, have you inserted yourself somehow as a character in there? Any of the characters represent friends or family or anyone you know, like, or are they just completely fictional?
I think it became like an organic mix. I didn't realize how much of myself was in there until my family told me, this, like my love for architecture is in there, my absolute geeky, nerdy side of anything slasher or film. I guess some of my friends are in there and also students, because I am a teacher and I teach at a European school. So meaning that I teach kids from all over Europe. So there's certain things that I've learned from each culture, like that I have a Croatian student here, an Austrian there. And then I know, okay, they tend to be more like this when it comes to relationships. They tend to be more open culturally. So I've kind of integrated that into the characters.
Pretty good. But I'm a little bit worried that it sounds like you got the inspiration for thinking about killing your students. Like, is that...
Not at all. I genuinely love them. And I'm also open about the ones that I get on with. I'm open that I am a writer. I don't always tell them what my pen name is, but some of them do know. And no, you don't need to worry. Oh, no. It's a very therapeutic thing.
I'm safe here.
You never know.
Yeah. So you like all the 90s movies and stuff like that. What about them? Like, I'm pretty much into all the 90s stuff. I know, like, it seems like a crime not to like the 70s and 80s more. And I've always enjoyed the newer sort of looking ones. I don't know why. Yeah. What about those movies do you like so much? What drew you into like the whole 90s? I know what you did last summer and all that sort of stuff.
I don't know if it's the same with you. So you also prefer 90s over 80s? Yeah. 70s and 2000s as well? Or...
Yeah, most of my movie collection is probably 90s onwards to now. Mm-hmm. I have a very small amount of 80s ones. It was like, there's a huge list of ones I probably haven't seen. I've watched them and I'm like, oh, these are great. These are awesome or whatever like that.
Are you also an 80s kid? Or?
Oh, I was born in 88.
We're more or less the same age. I'm 86. So personally, I can only say there's something with the aesthetic that feels very MTV era at the time. You know, when we grew up, there were a lot of video clips were a big thing, and there's something flashy and safe and fun, and it's kind of popcorn elementy, the 90s ones, whereas for me personally, 70s and 80s can be very gritty and grim, which is really good too. But as a kid, that's not what I liked looking at. As a teenager, you like something that's scary but still fun, you know, to be with your friends or with your
a so few I think more it's familiar that faces element. To you sort of thing, and could be like someone you've never even heard of, or it's an older person, you're like, I don't relate to this person. Is that kind of where the 90s ones got you?
I think I was a massive fan of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, for example. Well, actually, my pen name is derived from her role in I Know What You Did Last Summer, because Alan Shivers, Sarah Michelle Gellar's character was Helen Shivers in I Know What You Did Last Summer.
Oh, nice.
Personally, I think that chase scene for me is the best chase scene ever in slashers. That's the element I wanted to bring into my books, and that's the vibe that I have in my books, that kind of chase element a lot of the time. So,
is that the chase where, right, perfect, she makes it, and then at the last minute decides to go back into the alleyway?
Oh, my heart, exactly. Sometimes I stop the film at that point and go, she's fine, she's fine.
She's smart up to now, and then just
exactly.
Why did
I was
you
like,
do
come
that?
On, bring your Buffy savviness, exactly. So I think that's definitely part of it. And then she was also in Scream 2 that same year. So I think that was like 96, 97. That's when it really picked up, right? Urban Legends, then, you know, Cherry Falls, Valentine, all those ones were around the same era or early 2000s. I think it feels like a safe framework in a way. Is this way of like releasing stress and releasing fear or projecting your fear into the film, but you still know the structure of a slasher. And you're like, okay, this is scary, but I know how this works, kind of.
They're great movies. That's what I mean. It's hard to like, once you get hooked on a certain style or whatever. And I think they said, like, that's what I like about them. They just look newer. Like, they're old, gritty, sort of real dark looking and stuff like that of the 80s and whatever else. People love that look. I didn't enjoy that much either. So, yeah, I can 100% see why that would be your choice. Well, you said there's queer representation and mental health. Was that a personal reason to add that? Or was it just something you felt wasn't added in enough stories or something? What was the reason behind that?
I would say, well, I am gay myself, so I thought it was important to get representation in there. There are no male gay characters in there, but there is a lesbian relation in there, for example. There's a character in the sequel who's aromantic asexual. Just because I had been talking to the community, I had been reaching out on TikTok to people asking, who do you feel is underrepresented? And a lot of slashers are very sexualized, right? It's this morality of the moment you have sex or you're promiscuous blonde, you die. Kind of wanted to go against that, as fun as that is. But in my novels, it's more about female friendships and really coming together rather than there's backstabbing, no pun intended, and really like strong female bonds rather than everything having to be sexualized. So it's low on the spice front, a bit higher in the sequel, but more focused on interrelational aspects. So there's the gay aspect and then the mental health for sure. I have been in treatment for PTSD for a couple of years, so I thought this is a good way I don't know if it's a good way, but it felt like a healthy and vulnerable way to put myself in there and hopefully raise some awareness about symptoms that are not visible at all usually to people, because it's a very isolating disorder to have. So there's that's more in the sequel. So it's like the ones who have survived, obviously a lot of them go through PTSD, and I didn't want them just to be like, oh, all my friends got butchered, la la la, I'm going on a trip now.
How quick do people get over that in movies, hey? It's like someone dies right, and then almost like, I know you have to run away and do the next thing, but then the next scene and they're just sitting having a drink with someone. You moved on pretty quick.
Exactly. That's the thing. In the second book, they do go on a trip, but I didn't want them to just to be like jolly jolly. I wanted them to bring that trauma without it being too heavy. It's still very camp, you know, this mix of campness of the 90s with the PTSD representation in there.
That's so good. At the least second they're acknowledging one feels that more vulnerable.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And they don't trust new people, and they're like, should we bring these new people? And you never know, that's we trusted people too much in the first the first thing happened. So
they don't just have the randomly, like, yeah, that's a good point, because a lot of movies would do that where you've got two people who survived the first one in the next sequel or something like that. It's off to college or wherever else, so there's a brand new friend group that just suddenly all there again, so they can, like, you know, knock off like eight of them or whatever. Doesn't look like anyone's learned a lesson from the previous one.
Yeah, exactly, that was kind of the point. And I wanted these characters to be smart too. A lot of slasher characters are kind of dumb in films, which is fun again. And in the first one, I would say they're very naive in the first book because everything's new and they don't think this could actually happen to them, you know, they're teenagers. But in the second one, the ones who make it to, they're savvy, you know, they're like, we're not splitting up at any point, nobody's running up the stairs, they're going against all the slasher tropes, which as a reader hopefully makes you think, ah, they'll make you through because they know the rules now. But then there's other twists too.
Yeah, it sounds like each experience shapes them for the next one. So they know, okay, this is what happened last time. Let's learn from this. Do the exact same thing.
Let's
like
start
Scream.
Over. Exactly. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Stop trusting your friends. It's always someone in your friend group pretty much.
Yeah, exactly. All your friends don't get a new boyfriend. Yeah. I guess I did that with the first one because I was more of a love letter, because there are certain things when you go, really, you really did that girl or boy or human. But in the second one, it's a bit more like, oh, they're actually smart now. So you don't really see how the killer could get to them in the second one, which makes it even scarier because they know all these rules now, you know?
That's really good. And with your story, you're finishing. So the third one's out as well, or is it just the second one?
So the first one's out on Amazon, on all the different Amazons, and it's free on Kindle Unlimited. The second one is released today. So again, it's out on ebook, paperback, and then free on Kindle Unlimited. And the third one will be out, difficult to say. I'm going through the writing process now. I'm thinking April, May would be the final part. It will be out by then. They're needs amazing. To go through proofreading, editing. You know, there's a lot of other factors that come in before it's published. It takes a while.
Do you get final say in what's in it, or does someone else have to read it? I don't know how books work at all. I know how they work. You read them and that. They're like
you flip pages.
There's another page of words.
No, I'm an indie writer, so I'm independently published. So I publish everything myself. Oh, right. I'll do all the promo myself. The only thing I get help with is that you get a proofreader, you get an editor, and then a graphic designer for cover work, for artwork. Everything else is just me. So two sides, right? The nice thing is it's completely my story. Everything I wanted to be in there is in there. The negative is it's more difficult to get the word out there because you don't have a big publishing company that's behind you. So you really have to go for, you know, people are open to the genre like yourself. So thanks again for having me.
Yeah, you're welcome.
But it is very tricky to get the word out there in the beginning, and you kind of need to, rely on people's openness or willingness to try out someone who isn't a big name, really.
I have no idea the process. So interesting. I'm learning.
And, there you go.
If you've done the trilogy now, what's next for you? Like, are you doing more horror stuff, or do you have something else down the pipeline?
I will definitely stick to horror because that's my baby. That's where I feel comfortable in. It might go more in the psychological thriller aspect, but it still will definitely be horror. I have an idea for afterwards, but I don't want to say it yet because it's a bit of a spoiler. I could tell you after the recording. I will definitely stick to the horror genre for sure. Perhaps even slasher for a bit longer. It would be kind of cool to be known as it's a slasher author, and that people know what kind of to expect subgenre wise from me, right?
Would you want to be the next Stephen King, or is that too cliche? Do you have like a favorite author?
Oh, I've got tons of, most of them are also slasher authors, like Emerald O'Brien, Sarah Jules. They're very good. They're also independent authors, and I'm in touch with them, and we sometimes interview each other on social media. So I'm mostly inspired by people who are also independently published, because it's a lot of work to do everything on your own.
You get the struggle for each other sort of thing.
It's nice seeing how they write, like a chase scene, for example, because that's very tricky to write. Because if you think about chase scenes, you think of films, right? So actually having that on paper is very difficult, the pacing and making sure people, once they start reading, they get their heart pumping like they would on a film. So I've learned a lot from other slasher authors.
Oh, that's good. You got your own little network of people little communities.
A little nerd group. Yes, we do. Exactly.
Yeah. Do you want to say anything else about your book, or like, do you want to tell everyone where you can get it? I know you mentioned it before, but where can people get you? Like, and you don't have any other books, right? It's, these are your babies so far. There wasn't one before that.
No, these are the published ones so far. Let's put it that way. Yes. So it's on... on any of the Amazons you can find. So depending if it, whether that be Australian or UK or wherever, get the ebook, the paperback. It's being rebranded at the moment, so the cover will look different in a week or two, a bit more 90s movie posterish. It's free to read if you have Kindle Unlimited, the two of them. You can find me on TikTok or Instagram as Alan Shivers Author. That would be great if you give me a follow. That you can follow up on the sequels.
Expect millions of follows after this comes out. That'll be
all Australians.
Yeah, we like him.
The only thing is the difficulties reaching out to people in my own country, in Belgium, because most of them read in Dutch or in French or in German, the three national languages here, not English. So I'm actually known more outside of Belgium than I am my own country. Yeah, yeah.
You can go to the store and not get swamped with everyone. They're like, oh my God, it's him.
I don't think that will happen anytime soon, but yeah.
Well, that's good. Thank you so much for coming on the show. This is amazing. I feel like my questions aren't that good because I'm not used to asking about books, but
they are good, don't worry. I appreciate them.
You've told me a lot about it. It's very interesting and people need to check it out.
Yes. That I was going to say, definitely check it out. And I know some people aren't that much into reading. I've had a couple of friends who normally don't read but love watching slashes. But as I was writing it, I very much had a film or a movie in my head. Most people that said when they read it, it felt like watching a slasher movie. So if you just feel like having a little break and maybe you can't watch something at a certain moment, or you're on a train ride or wherever, or you're waiting for something, give it a go because it's very fast paced, and in 1 or 2 days it's done, you know.
Nice. Well, thank you so much for coming on the Creepy Crap Podcast. Alan Shivers, you're my first author. This was amazing. Thank you so much for coming on.
Were you going to say slash? Nice little pun there. Morning
it
slash.
It wasn't actually, but I'll take credit for it. Yeah, that's
good job.
I meant. Yeah, thank you for waking up and talking to me. It was amazing.
My absolute pleasure. Thanks a lot for having me.
No worries, mate. I'll see you later. So again, that was Alan Shivers. Shiver me timbers. And that was the Creepy Crap Podcast. The first author on the show. That's pretty cool, hey? So anyway, it was European Halls. That's his book. The first two are out. Check him out. It's Alan Shivers, the author from Belgium. International guest. So many things I can say about the episode. It was great. Something different for a change. It's not just about a movie. It's about a book. It's a first. I don't even know how to read. No, I do. Anyway, this was the Creepy Crap Podcast. My name's Danny Boy. Thank you for listening, and I'll catch you next week.